This is Audible.
Audible Inc. presents Cat Sense, How the New Feline Science Can Make You a Better Friend to Your Pet. Written by John Bradshaw. Narrated by Graham Malcolm.
Introduction. The domestic cat is the most popular pet in the world today. Across the globe, cats outnumber man's best friend, the dog, by as many as 3 to 1. Footnote. This ratio takes many millions of unowned animals into account, and also incorporates a guess as to the numbers in Muslim countries where dogs are rare. End of note. As more and more of us come to live in cities, an environment for which dogs are not ideally suited, cats have, for many, become the lifestyle pet of choice. About 1/3 of U.S. households have one or more cats, while they are found in over 1/4 of U.K. families. Even in Australia, where the domestic cat is routinely demonized as a heartless killer of innocent endangered marsupials, about 1/5 of households own cats. All over the world, images of cats are used to advertise all kinds of consumer goods, from perfume to furniture to confectionery. The cartoon cat Hello Kitty has appeared on over 50,000 different branded products in more than 60 countries, netting her creators billions of dollars in royalties. Even though a significant minority of people don't like cats, perhaps as many as 1 person in 5, the majority who do show no sign of relinquishing their affection for their favorite animal. Cats somehow manage to be simultaneously affectionate and self-reliant. By comparison with dogs, cats are low-maintenance pets. They do not need training. They can be left alone all day without pining for their owners the way many dogs do. But they will nonetheless greet us affectionately when we get home. They groom themselves. Their mealtimes have been transformed by today's pet food industry from a chore into a picnic. They remain unobtrusive most of the time, yet seem delighted to receive our affection. In a word, they are convenient. Yet, despite their apparently effortless transformation into urban sophisticates, cats still have 3 out of 4 feet firmly planted in their wild origins. The dog's mind has been radically altered from that of its ancestor, the grey wolf. Cats, on the other hand, still think like wild hunters. Within a couple of generations, cats can revert back to the independent way of life that was the exclusive preserve of their predecessors some 10,000 years ago. Even today, many millions of cats worldwide live not as pets, but as feral scavengers and hunters, living alongside people but inherently distrustful of them. Yet, due to the astonishing flexibility with which kittens learn the difference between friend and foe, cats can move between these dramatically different lifestyles within a generation. The offspring of a feral mother and feral father can become indistinguishable from any pet cat. A pet that is abandoned by its owner and cannot find another may turn to scavenging. A generation or two on, and its descendants will be indistinguishable from the thousands of feral cats that live shadowy existences in every one of our cities. As cats become more popular and ever more numerous, so those who revile them are once again raising their voices. Cats have never shared the unclean tag foisted on the dog and the pig, but despite their superficially universal acceptance, a minority of people across all cultures find cats disagreeable, and as many as 1 in 20 say that they find them repulsive. Footnote. The Prophet Muhammad is said to have loved his cat Mueza so much that he would do without his cloak rather than disturb one that was sleeping on it. Minu Reeves, Muhammad in Europe, New York, NYU Press, 2000, 52. End of note. When asked, few Westerners will admit that they don't like dogs. Those who do turn out either not to like animals in general, or can trace their aversion to a specific experience, perhaps being bitten in childhood. Cat phobia is deeper seated, less widespread than the common phobias of snakes and spiders, both of which have a logical basis in helping the sufferer to avoid the poisonous varieties, but just as powerful an experience for those who suffer from it. Footnote. a recognized medical condition referred to as iluriphobia. End of note. Cat phobics are likely to have been at the forefront of the religious persecution that led to the killing of millions of cats in medieval Europe, and it is likely that cat phobia was just as common then as it is today. Thus, there can be no guarantee that the cat's current popularity will last. Today, spurred on by self-confessed cat haters, the cat is coming under attack on the specific grounds that it is a wanton and unnecessary killer of innocent wildlife. The anti-cat lobby, at its most extreme, demands that cats no longer be allowed to hunt, that pet cats should be kept indoors, and that feral cats should be exterminated. Cat owners are vilified for supporting an animal that is portrayed as laying waste to the wildlife around their homes. Those veterinarians who seek to manage the welfare of feral cats by neutering and vaccinating them and then returning them to their original territory have come under attack from within their own profession, some veterinarians claiming that this constitutes illegal abandonment that serves the welfare of neither the cat nor the adjacent wildlife. Both sides admit that cats are natural hunters, but fail to agree on how this behavior might best be managed. In parts of Australia and New Zealand, where cats are defined as alien predators introduced from the Northern Hemisphere, they are banned from some areas and subject to curfews or compulsory microchipping in others. Even in places where cats have lived alongside the native wildlife for hundreds of years, such as in the UK and the USA, their increasing popularity as pets has prompted a vocal minority to press for similar restrictions. Cat owners point to a lack of scientific evidence that pet cats contribute significantly to a decline in the population of any wild bird or mammal, which are mainly caused by the recent proliferation of other pressures on wildlife, such as loss of habitat. Consequently, any restrictions imposed on cats are unlikely to result in a resurgence of the species that cats supposedly threaten. Cats themselves are, of course, unaware of this controversy. The greatest threat to their immediate well-being comes not from people, but from other cats. In the same way that cats are not born to love people, this is something they have to learn when they are kittens, so they do not automatically love other cats. Indeed, their default position is to be suspicious, even fearful, of every cat they meet. Unlike dogs, which are descended from the highly sociable wolf, cats were originally both solitary and territorial. As they began their association with mankind some 10,000 years ago, their tolerance for one another must have been forced to improve in order that they could live at the higher densities that man's provision of food for them, at first accidental, then deliberate, allowed. Unfortunately, cats have yet to evolve the kind of optimistic enthusiasm for contact with their own kind that characterizes dogs. As a result, many cats spend their lives trying to avoid contact with each other. All the while, their owners are inadvertently compelling them to live cheek by jowl with cats they have no reason to trust, whether that be the neighbor's cats or the second cat obtained by the owner to keep him company. As their popularity increases, so inevitably does the number of cats that each cat is forced into contact with, thereby increasing the tensions that each experiences. Finding it ever harder to avoid social conflict, many cats find it nearly impossible to relax. Moreover, the stress they experience comes to affect their behavior, and even their health. The well-being of many pet cats falls far short of what it should be, perhaps because their welfare does not grab the headlines in the way that dogs does, perhaps because they tend to suffer in silence. In 2011, a veterinary charity in the UK estimated that the average pet cat's physical and social environment scored only 64 out of 100, with households that owned more than one cat scoring even lower. Understanding of cat behavior scored little better, at 66 out of 100. There can be little doubt that if cat owners understood more about what makes their cats tick, many cats could live much happier lives. Faced with such pressures, cats need not our emotional reactions, irrespective of whether we find them endearing or not, but our understanding. Cats, unlike dogs, are undemonstrative. They keep their feelings to themselves. Therefore, while dogs can benefit from the knowledge of their true natures that can only come from science, for cats, this comprehension is essential. Cats, unlike dogs, rarely tell us what they need, beyond asking for food when they're hungry. They require our assistance when, as happens far too often, their social lives run awry. Cats desperately need the kind of research from which dogs have benefited. But unfortunately, feline science has not seen the explosion of activity that has recently occurred in canine science. Cats have not grabbed the attention of scientists in the way that dogs have. However, over the past 2 decades there have been significant advances, discoveries that have profoundly affected scientists' view of how cats view the world and what makes them tick, and these will form the core of this book. Their new insights will give us the first indications as to how we might help the cat adapt to the many demands we now put upon it. Cats have adapted to live alongside people while retaining much of their wild behavior. Apart from the minority that belong to a breed, cats are not mankind's creation in the sense that dogs are. Rather, they have co-evolved with us, molding themselves into 2 niches that we have accidentally provided for them. The first role for cats in human society was that of pest controller. Some 10,000 years ago, wild cats moved in to exploit the concentrations of rodents provided by our first granaries, and adapted themselves to hunting there in preference to the surrounding countryside. Realizing how beneficial this was, cats after all had no interest in eating grain and plant foods themselves, people must have begun to encourage cats to stay by making available their occasional surpluses of animal products, such as milk and offal. The cat's second role, which undoubtedly followed hard on the heels of the first, but whose origins are lost in antiquity, is that of companion. The first good evidence that we have for pet cats comes from Egypt some 4,000 years ago, but women and children in particular may have been adopting kittens as pets long before this. Thus, the cat is not a man-made animal, if we leave pedigree animals to one side. It has fashioned itself through the normal processes of evolution to occupy 2 overlapping but contrasting roles within human society. First, pest controller, then companion. Yet, as far as humans are concerned, these 2 roles have now ceased to go hand in hand. Although cats were until recently treasured for their prowess as hunters, few owners today express delight when their cat deposits a dead mouse on their kitchen floor. To understand why a cat behaves as it does, we need to understand where it came from and the influences that have molded it into what it is today. Therefore, the first 3 chapters of this book chart the cat's evolution from wild, solitary hunter to high-rise apartment dweller. Unlike dogs, only a small minority of cats have ever been intentionally bred by people, and furthermore, when there has been deliberate breeding, it has been exclusively for appearance. No one has bred cats to guard houses, to herd livestock, to accompany hunters on their quest for game. Instead, cats have evolved to fill a niche brought about by man's development of agriculture, from its beginnings in the harvest and storage of wild grains to today's mechanized agribusiness. Of course, when the cat first infiltrated our settlements many thousands of years ago, its other qualities did not go unnoticed. Its appealing features, its childlike face and eyes, the softness of its fur, and, crucially, its ability to learn how to become affectionate towards us, led to its adoption as a pet. Subsequently, mankind's passion for symbolism and mysticism played a role in elevating the cat, first to the status of religious icon in ancient Egypt, and then to demon in medieval Europe. In both societies, popular attitudes toward cats were profoundly influenced by such connotations. Throughout history, these extreme views towards cats have impacted not only on how they were treated, but on their very biology, affecting both how they behave and the way they look. Cats have changed in order to live alongside humans, but the ways we perceive and interpret the physical world that we share are very different. Chapters 4 to 6 examine those differences. Humans and cats are both mammals, but our senses and brains work in different ways. These differences are often underappreciated by cat owners. As humans, our natural tendency is to interpret the world around us as if it worked in the same way as the human brain. Even in today's world of rationality and science, we still treat the world around us as if it was sentient, attributing intention to the weather, to the earth, to the movements of the stars in the sky. How easy, therefore, is it for us all to fall into the trap of thinking that because cats are communicative and affectionate, they must, more or less, be little furry humans. Science, however, reveals that cats are anything but. Beginning with the way that every kitten constructs its own version of the world, with consequences that will last its whole lifetime, this part of the book goes on to describe how the cat gathers information about its surroundings, especially the way it uses its hypersensitive sense of smell, how its brain interprets and makes use of that information, and how its emotions guide its responses to opportunities and challenges alike. In scientific circles, it has only recently become acceptable to talk about animal emotions, and there is still a school of thought which maintains that emotions are a byproduct of consciousness, meaning that no animals except man, and possibly a few primates, can possibly possess them. However, common sense dictates that if an animal that shares our basic brain structure and hormone system looks frightened, it must be experiencing something very like fear. Probably not in quite the same way that we would experience it, but fear nonetheless. Most of what biology has revealed about the cat's world fits the idea that cats have evolved as predators first and foremost. Most, but not everything. Cats are social animals too, otherwise they could never have become pets as well as hunters. The demands of domestication, first of all the need to live cheek by jowl with other cats in human settlements, and then the benefits of forming affectionate bonds with people, have extended cats' social repertoires out of all recognition when compared to those of their wild ancestors. The book's third section explores these social connections in detail, how cats conceive of and interact with other cats and with people, and why two cats may react very differently in the same situation. In other words, the science of cat personality. I conclude with an examination of the cat's current place in the world and how this might evolve in the coming decades. Cats are under pressure from many different interests, some well-meaning, others antagonistic. Pedigree cats are still in a minority, and those who breed them are still in a position to avoid the practices that have so adversely affected the welfare of pedigree dogs over the past few decades. However, the growing fashion for hybrids between domestic cats and wild felids, resulting in breeds such as the Bengal, can have unintended consequences. We also need to ask whether the cat is being inadvertently and subtly altered by those who hold cat welfare close to their hearts. Paradoxically, the drive to neuter as many cats as possible, with the laudable aim of reducing the suffering of unwanted kittens, may be eliminating the characteristics of the very cats who are best suited to living in harmony with mankind. Many of the cats that avoid neutering will be those that are most suspicious of people and the best at hunting. The friendliest, most docile cats are nowadays neutered before leaving any descendants, while the wildest, meanest ferals are likely to escape the attentions of cat rescuers and breed at will, thus pushing the cat's evolution away from, rather than towards, better integration with human society. We are in danger of demanding more from our cats than they can deliver. We somehow expect that an animal that has been our pest controller of choice for thousands of years should somehow be able to give up that lifestyle because we now happen to find its consequences distasteful or even unacceptable. We also expect that we should be free to choose our cat's companions and neighbors without regard for their origins as solitary, territorial animals. Somehow the presumption has been made that because dogs can be flexible in their choice of canine companions, cats will be equally tolerant of whatever relationships we expect them to develop, purely for our convenience. Yet, until about 20 or 30 years ago, cats were able to keep pace with man's demands. With the exception of pedigree cats, their transition from wild to domestic has been driven by natural selection, in contrast to almost every other domestic animal, whose breeding has been strictly controlled for many generations past. Cats had essentially evolved to fit roles that we provided. We allowed them to find their own mates, and those kittens that were best suited to living alongside humans, in whatever capacity was required of them at the time, were the most likely to thrive and produce the next generation. Evolution is not going to produce a cat that has no urge to hunt and that is as socially tolerant as a dog, at least not within a timescale that will be acceptable to the cat's detractors. Even for such a prolific breeder as the cat, natural selection would take many generations to move even a token step in this direction. Only deliberate, carefully considered breeding can produce cats that are well suited to the demands of tomorrow's owners. The cat's future will not take care of itself, but there is also much that can be done to improve the lot of cats today. Better socialization of kittens, better understanding of what kind of environment cats really need, more deliberate intervention in teaching cats to cope with situations that they find distressing. All these can play their part in helping cats to adjust to the demands we now make of them, and can also only serve to deepen the bond between cat and owner. Cats are in many ways the ideal pet for the 21st century, but will they be able to adapt to the 22nd? If they are to continue to remain in our affections, and the persecution they have received in the past indicates that this is hardly a given, some kind of consensus needs to emerge between the cat welfare charities, the conservationists, and the cat fanciers as to how to produce a type of cat that ticks all the boxes. These changes need to be guided by science. Initially, the way forward will be for cat owners and the general public alike to understand better where cats came from and why they behave the way they do. At the same time, cat owners can play their part in rehabilitating the cat's fraying reputation by learning how to channel their cat's behavior, not only to discourage them from hunting, but also to make them happier in themselves. In the longer term, the emerging science of behavioral genetics will help to generate a cat that can better adapt to an ever more crowded world. Cats cannot do this for themselves. The time has come for the gap between what cats are and what society demands of them to be first confronted and then resolved.